Did you know a large part of our population, our global population, does not feel welcome at your workplace? They do not feel included. They do not feel that you're talking to them. And then when they even get a job with you, they're afraid of being honest about themselves personally in order to be able to better do their work. It's true. And I'm talking about accessibility. It's something we can all do better at. And our guest today, well, she's in a position to do something about it. Accessibility is our topic today, and I'm excited for it. Hold on. This is Relationships at Work, the Employee Experience and Workplace Culture Podcast. I'm Russell. Hope you're having a great day. Fantastic day. Fantabulous day. I'll make up words to describe the kind of day you're going to have or already having. Sure, I'm in communications. That's part of it, right? Is that if you understand what I say, it's good communications. Might be horrible grammar, but it is good communications. I'll tell you something that's not so good. Ooh, do you like that? My radio training helped me with the segues. Something that drives me a little nuts is exit interviews. Oh, I don't know if you've had this experience, but I've seen some exit interviews, and you look through the 10, 15 list of questions, and you're wondering, why are we asking these questions at a time when somebody's leaving the organization? Why are we not asking these questions while they're still here? Exit interviews should not be a tool for you to fix things about an employee's experience. That should be while they are working for you. They should be asked regularly, quarterly. I don't know. It depends on the number of questions, but it should be pretty frequent so you understand why they're there, what works for them, what's not working for them. Why not build the relationship while they're in your employment? So you know what? I got frustrated enough that I created one. I created actually an employee journey template, 3 surveys, onboarding, enter, stay surveys, which is a sort of a thriving survey, and then the final one, which is the exit survey. You're talking to them in these 3 interviews to find out what's working and getting, you know, the groundwork when they start, then what's working for them throughout the journey within the organization, and then as they leave, to make sure that what you did with them, what they did for you, was working, right? And I thought, you know what? I'm going to create it, and I'm going to give it out for free, because why not? I feel like more organizations might need these, or at least start having the conversations about them. So you just go to russelllolliker.com or relationshipsatwork.ca, top right, free download. So nice and easy. You go there, you click it, it's in your hot little hands. And you can go off and forth and help your employees thrive. How's that for a plan? Speaking of plans, oh man, my segues are working. Guest today, she's working on a plan. She is working on a plan to make Canada more accessible. And I'm thrilled to talk to her. I just love this conversation because I learned so much about, well, really what we should be looking for, the mindset we really need to be having. This is not a thing about checklists. This is, we need to approach accessibility with a different mindset. She opened my mind to a lot of things you think you know, things you think you understand, but unless you're actually in that position with a disability, whether it's visible or not visible, you don't know. And leaders need to know. Because there is such an opportunity to embrace accessibility in the organization for the betterment of their organization. Now, a lot of what we're going to talk about today is about Canada, because my guest today is the first chief accessibility officer for our country. However, there's a lot of takeaways that anywhere in the world could be taking away. We all could be better at this. Some are already doing fine, but guess what? This is a forever thing. Everybody can be better at this. Me, you, our bosses, our leaders, people we work with, as cultures. Oh man, I'm fired up because my brain, it tweaked. It went, yeah, why aren't we doing this? And I hope that's what you take away from this as well as a lot of other takeaways and mindset shifts. Because Stephanie Cadu, who's my guest today, she's fantastic. And I'm really, really excited for you to hear from her. And let's go talk to Stephanie. Hold on. On the show today, it's Stephanie Cadu, and here is why she is awesome. She is Canada's first, bold, underlined, first of all of Canada, Chief Accessibility Officer, for you acronym nuts, that's CAO, and she serves as an independent special advisor to Canada's Ministry of Employment, Workforce Development, and Disability Inclusion. What does that actually mean? I'm so glad you asked. Well, that means she'll monitor and report on systemic and emerging accessibility issues and produce an annual report on progress and outcomes achieved under the Accessible Canada Act. But this is a new job. She's had lots of past ones, which includes a former BC MLA, Minister of Legislative Assembly, told you we liked acronyms, a former Minister of Children and Family Development, Minister of Social Development, and before all that big P politics, she was Marketing and Development Director at the BC Paraplegic Association. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Russell.
Oh, accessibility in the workplace. So many questions, especially its impact on the employee experience. So I want to get into that, but I can't, because I have to ask you another question first, which is, what's your best or worst employee experience?
Best employee experience. Most standout memory would be from when I was first starting my sort of management career. And I say that because I did some, you know, early stuff, but as I was starting to move up, and I had a manager that I was going to and asking for advice. Can I do this? Can I do that? Can we do this? Would that be okay? And he said to me one day, you know, Stephanie, sometimes it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And I knew what he was getting at. And I thought to myself, wow, okay. So he trusts me. Right. And it was an opportunity, I think, for me to grow and feel that I had the trust of my supervisor to do that. I had room to do that, room to make mistakes, room to try things. And I think that was really important in my growth as an employee and as a manager. Having that sort of be given that trust and be given given that advice, which of course could be viewed as very cheeky and in some circumstances probably not acceptable. However, if you take it at what I think he meant by it, and what I do believe he meant by it was it's important to trust yourself and to do things rather than always be looking for, you know, a structure that will allow it. I think, you know, sometimes you have to fiddle around the edges, and I think that has served me well going forward.
Getting that kind of permission, as I even just talking today, someone didn't realize the power she had. She was afraid to ask questions of certain people because she didn't know if she'd be allowed to email them. I'm like, just go email them. The worst thing people can say is that you shouldn't have done that, but you've already done it. So it's mm-hmm. funny that more leaders don't understand that people put themselves in these boxes of prevention, of lack of confidence, of fear, that their own leaders don't realize are actually a part of this.
I think that happens a lot. I think especially in larger structures, people get removed, right? And they think, of course, people know that. Well, no, people don't, right? And sometimes the way policies or directives come down, they are very limiting, and very scary in some cases for those people reading them at the, you know, on the front line, going, oh, I guess I'm not allowed to do that anymore. And we don't think about that impact, and we don't think about the fact that they don't just have the ability to knock on the door and say, hello, I don't know what this means, or, well, do you know how that's going to impact me? You know, as a minister, when I would go out and talk to our frontline people, one of the things I asked all the time was, what can I do? What can I change that will make your job better? And what can we do to work smarter? What do I not know about what's going on here? And you get, you know, most people are afraid to answer the question, but when people did, it was really insightful. And I think more leaders need to ask those questions and be more curious, more intentionally.
And I think the idea of curiosity and asking questions and understanding people comes in pretty handy with the topic we're talking about today, which is accessibility. And there's so many ways that I want to come at this and ask questions of it, from a workplace culture, barriers, experience. Mm-hmm. But I think we can't do any of that until we define the term accessibility, considering it feels so broad, but also feels very specific for some people. So can you sort of lay that out for us?
Sure. Well, in the let's do it in the context of the Accessible Canada Act. That's what I'm appointed under and working with. Under the Act, disability, and I say, and I'm going this route because there's no accessibility need if there's no disability. So we'll go back. We'll go to disability. Disability is defined as an impairment, including a physical, mental, intellectual, cognitive, learning, communication, or sensory impairment, or a functional limitation, whether permanent, temporary, or episodic in nature, evident or not, that in interaction with a barrier hinders a person's full and equal participation in society. That's a lot to absorb, but it's important because it's much broader than the average person understands disability. Most people understand disability as sort of a medical condition, right? But it is much broader and often much more invisible. And that's why that broad definition is so important. It's also important because of the word barrier, because this is the social sort of, this is based on a social model of disability where the person isn't the problem. The disability isn't the problem. The barrier is the problem. So the barriers then, by definition, are anything physical, architectural, technological, attitudinal, or based on information or communications or a result of a policy or practice that hinders full and equal participation. So then accessibility falls from that. Accessibility is essentially the absence of those barriers. It is the removal, the proactive removal of those barriers, so that everyone, regardless of ability or disability, can equally access the built environment, the culture, policies, products, communications, and so on. So, there's a lot to unpack there, but it is important, and I'm glad you asked to get the context, because it's not widely understood beyond those people who are experiencing the barriers.
And I'm worried when it comes to definitions like that, because it's all-encompassing. It's also very government-y. So it is, even the definition makes a lot of sense to me when you go through it. But if you gave this to an organization, a workplace, and go, here you go, I can see it being difficult for them because it's not bullet points. It's not, oh, where's my checklist of things that I can do? And then I'm successful and look, I'm done now. Mm-hmm. It can be even the definition seems almost like a barrier of the lack of being able to define it succinctly, which isn't easy to do. So how do you approach that to leaders and organizations, the C-suite and so forth, who need to understand because they need to be more accessible?
I think it's really important to personalize it as much as possible. So some people will have had experience with this because they themselves may have a disability and just not have disclosed it. There are other people who have an education in disability, so to speak, and the need for accessibility because of a family member or a close friend. But for those who don't or who only have one perspective, I think personalizing to understand that disability doesn't just happen once or to some people. It often happens in many ways over a person's lifetime. People with one disability may have more than one disability. And as people age, almost everyone will acquire one. So at some point in your life, accessibility is going to matter to you. You just don't know it yet. And if you think about it in that context, and you think about it in the context of that, you know, one in five Canadians, even more than one in five Canadians now, self-identifies as having a disability of one form or another. That's an awfully large part of the population. It's a part of the population we cannot ignore. And if we ignore it, we ignore it at our detriment.
I want to get into that more because you talk about 1 in 5. That's a lot. That is a missed opportunity for any organization that isn't embracing accessibility right now. What else are they missing by not understanding that this is a workforce that is available?
Well, you know, and I've tried to have this conversation with people to explain, okay, well, it's, you know, it's between 20 and 25% of the population. So it's not a discrete group. It's not people with disabilities over there who never come here. It is 25%, period, across the board. Every market, every segment, every group. So whether it's your customers, your employees, your stakeholders, their family members, your competitors, it is affecting your business. And today, with what we're seeing in the labor force, the human resources crunch, what is being coined as the Great Resignation, we're seeing help wanted ads everywhere, from restaurants to emergency rooms. That's fascinating and scary all at the same time. And businesses have to be worried about how they're going to meet their labor needs now and into the future. And with that, there is really no, I can't see how organizations can do that without considering the fact that right now there are 645,000 Canadians that are ready, willing, and able to work, more than half of whom have a post-secondary education, but because of their disability have yet to be able to link to the job market. That's a huge opportunity, a huge missed opportunity, and for all sorts of reasons that are all the tangible and intangible reasons why accessibility is important, so that you can welcome those people into your business as employees, welcome them as customers, and reap all of the benefits that research shows you benefit from when you have an inclusive culture.
Can you give me some examples of what a North Star looks like for this? So organizations are figuring it out. They've got it. They're accessible now for obvious and not obvious disabilities. What is that? I don't want to say utopia, because that feels like it's never going to be gotten to. This is something that needs to happen. So what does that North Star look like, and some examples of that? I'm thinking like hiring practices and the workplace culture. What does that look like for you?
Well, I mean, obviously the first things people go to is the physical accessibility. It's the thing people understand. Ramps, washrooms, power doors. Of course, that stuff's really important. The fact that we're still having to have those conversations is after 30 years with a disability, to me, frustrating, but real. But it's not just about that. So it's understanding that it goes beyond that. It's understanding that you may have an employee that needs voiced text ability on the telephones, or large print materials, that all your employees are going to need access to the microwave in the break room, so it can't be up on top of the fridge, that your emergency procedures have to include how do we safely get people with disabilities out of the building. There's so many considerations. And then, of course, the most important and the most difficult thing to change, because all of that ultimately can be done with a checklist, right? What can't be done with a checklist is the culture piece. And I think that's the biggest challenge going forward. And it's the piece we really need to work hardest to crack. We all have and carry biases. It's our brain, you know, shortcutting for us. It's based on our experiences. It's based on what we learned. It's based on what we've seen. It's based on our impressions. And a lot of them are wrong, frankly. And so we carry them, but we carry them unconsciously. We don't go out and say, I don't believe people with disabilities should work. But when they come to you in an interview process, your unconscious bias kicks in and goes, well, this person clearly can't do the job. But you don't even know you're doing that. And that's the problem, right? So you don't even know that you're using language in your culture at work that is offensive to people or marginalizes people. You don't know necessarily that the structures, processes, ways you've structured your workplace are keeping people with disabilities away or forcing them to leave, if they acquire a disability on the job, which is a huge cost to business. So that culture piece, I think, is the most challenging. You need to be able to create a culture that is valuing of all persons' contributions, regardless of how they show up, understanding that there is value in that diversity, and welcoming those conversations where they need to happen about how to make things work better. And if you can do that, then people will feel confident and trust that they can be welcome in that organization, that they can ask for what they need to be successful in their job. And that's where that ultimate sort of aha moment, I think, happens in an organization. The other stuff is checkboxes. The other stuff is easy to achieve if you just put it to task. It is not as easy to change culture.
Absolutely. And that's, everybody's like, what's my takeaway? What's my actionable? What am I supposed to do? What's my, give me a checklist. I'll get through that. It's the mindset piece that I'm scared. It is so much harder to change. We've talked about your North Star, but where do you start? Because I immediately, somebody will say, well, it was mandated to me, or my boss told me to do X, Y, and Z. So I'll do those things. We'll put in a ramp. I'm being very simplistic. But where would you like to see the first steps be when it comes to culture change?
It's leading by example, certainly. And I think, you know, I don't want to say that, I don't want to leave the impression that I don't think organizations and leaders are trying to do this. I actually think they are. I'm very positive on the fact that, frankly, right now, I think, you know, sort of all of the stars have aligned. The federal government has an act that says we're going to do this in the federal government that says it will be so. Right now, it's a matter of, yes, in the federal government and all of its related regulated entities to build that out and to do the work. But it will be so by 2040. The barriers will be eliminated by 2040. And that, as a federal government making that statement and that commitment, undoubtedly influences other levels of government and the private sector. There are regulated private sector entities that will lead in this as a result. And there are private sector companies that are leading ahead of this, that are trying to do this. I've worked with lots of leaders over time that are really engaged and believe in this, want to do the right things, are trying to do the right things. But as you said, also with the definition, it's a lot of work. And it's not easy, and it will change, and the goalposts will likely move from time to time. We will learn how to do things better, how we can be even better, and things will change. 40, 50 years ago, we didn't even have building codes that required accessibility. Building codes today have been modified many times and will likely change more times into the future. The idea, though, is that culture shift. We're getting to that place where people understand that this is the right thing to do. Societally, we accept that people with disabilities are equal citizens and should have equal ability to participate. That's the first step. Now we have to action it. Now we have to make sure that our actions match our intention. And I do think that will is out there. I don't have rose-colored glasses that it will be easy or a bumpy free ride. I believe there will be challenges. And part of my role is going to be to highlight the successes and the challenges as we do this. And it won't be done by one person. It won't be done by one organization in government or one company. It is going to be an all of us effort if we're going to be successful. And I'm just very hopeful that we're at that stage now where people are ready to have that conversation.
You've touched on it a bit, but whose responsibility is this? Because I'm picturing somebody in the C-suite going, well, we're going to create an accessibility workforce. Delegate, delegate, delegate.
Absolutely.
How does this happen? How does this change?
It has to happen everywhere. So yes, the political leaders have said this will happen, and they have to buy in at all levels. The CEOs have to buy in. The boards have to buy in. Everybody has to buy in. But if you're going to change the culture, your frontline has to buy in too. Your customers have to buy in. Everybody has to be on this page. We have to, as a society, want this. But individually, in companies and in inside government, it's going to be the responsibility of everyone to see the barriers, to do the work to remove them, to do that work on themselves to make sure that they're welcoming of their fellow employees and their clients and people they serve. It's on all of us, and no one's perfect. People will make mistakes. People will learn. And that's, I think, curiosity and openness, willingness to learn is going to be a huge part of this. Willingness to get to know your fellow employees, to get to know the people you work with, the people in your company, and say, yeah, okay, I didn't realize there was more. There was more than met the eye. I didn't realize you were that was a challenge. Now I know that I can do something differently to make that work better for you. And when we do that together, we have success.
I want to get more on the personal side of this, especially because as much as we're talking about we need to, we should, obviously yeah. We're going to do these things. I get that. But I don't know if people realize by not embracing accessibility the damage they're doing to their organization. Because of all the people that are in that organization that are afraid to raise their hand about their disabilities.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to somebody on Facebook today that have managers that are like, you don't have a disability. Because they like literally do not believe them unless they have a doctor's note or they can see it. Yeah. It doesn't exist. Yeah. And that's the person they have to talk to make their lives better at work. So what are the impacts of that?
If we don't have that culture of understanding, that culture of inclusion, then those employees aren't going to feel valued, aren't going to feel safe, and are going to leave or not come at all. And that's going to be harmful to the organization. It's going to be harmful more broadly, as we've talked about. But I think there are lots of things that employers can do. And some of it's right at the front end, right? In terms of a hiring practice, how do we get out of our own way with our hiring practices? And some of that is asking some questions of yourself, right? Do you have the right expertise in-house on this? Are your people trained and do they understand this? What are the processes? Is your website the first barrier? Is your website accessible? Are you screening people out by the way you're writing job descriptions with elements that aren't actually required for the job? Are you adding a requirement of recent experience when it really isn't necessary? Because that could screen out somebody who's had to take a leave for medical reasons. Are your processes accessible? So are you providing applicants with alternatives? So if you're doing testing as a part of the process, are there alternative formats available for that test if somebody is blind or has a cognitive impairment? What about, are you using artificial intelligence in your screening tools or in your interviewing? Are you doing video interviews? Because there's a study out of the US right now that is showing that some of these tools have potential to actually violate the Americans with Disabilities Act. So similarly, they would be a problem up here. It's really good reading and it questions why we do things, right? Why do we put those things in place and are they necessary? So I think some of that is easy, but the culture piece is something that has to be nurtured over time. So you can ask the immediate questions, but you have to nurture the culture, and that's an ongoing process.
What scares you about all this? What scares you about a person that's now the Chief Accessibility Officer of the Canada and still working, you know, through your mandate and mm-hmm. that, defining that and so forth? But you've also lived in this world for a very long time. Your work with the Accessibility Association, personal experiences. What are you afraid of?
Apathy. I am afraid that we will we will say, well, we have this act here, we're doing this work. We've put it on paper. And that won't do it. That culture shift and the change in how we do things, that willingness to actually be different has to live, and it has to be a living thing. It is too easy for this to become one of those things that we just push over to the side and say, well, we did it. You can't do it once. It's an ongoing thing. It's forever. And that's the piece that worries me the most, is that people will do what they have to. In my role under the Accessible Canada Act, those entities will do what they have to do. But then there will be sort of a stagnation. So I think one of my roles is to remind them that it's an ongoing process. It's to champion it. It's to challenge them. It's to inspire them to keep going, to keep it on the agenda, to talk about the successes, to talk about the wins, to celebrate steps forward, because it will not happen overnight. And we have to be aware and conscious of the fact that even the steps have to be celebrated. And that's a challenge, because for a person like me, who's lived this for 30 years, a person who has faced the barriers on an ongoing basis for 30 years, and keep sort of feeling like I'm running my head against a wall. The disability community, the people who are living this, will be equally frustrated with a lack of progress. They will be equally disillusioned if we don't have change. All they want is to be included and to be seen as equal and valuable and to be able to access society in the way others do. It's really not rocket science. But it is very exclusionary and very discriminatory if we don't do it. Our human rights laws have been in place for years and years and years, saying it's illegal to discriminate based on disability. But it was up to the person with a disability to fight when they came up against a barrier. What is changing now is that the Act says we will proactively remove those barriers. We will not build them in from the beginning. And where we do, and we make a mistake, we will tear them down. That's the change. And that's the change we have to see more broadly. And I believe that government will lead that. And now it's my role to help champion and inspire that change.
Do you feel like anything emerging barrier-wise when it comes to this? Or do you feel like, as you've mentioned, we're going up the same hill over and over again? Or do you feel like there's any other emerging challenges that should be noted, as opposed to just, oh, we're dealing with ignorance again. Oh, we're dealing with, building code issues. Like, is there anything new or emerging that should be sort of mentioned?
There's a lot of work to do. And as we do the work, we're going to learn about those challenges. And meeting each of those challenges will help us pinpoint not only success, but the trends. And we'll see things emerge, and we'll see what needs to be addressed differently. What haven't we thought about? What haven't we considered? And that's part of my role. And I'm going to learn that by engaging with the folks that are doing the work. I'm going to do that by engaging with the disability community broadly, with individuals who are experiencing those challenges. We're going to hear them. We're going to hear the examples one at a time. And we're going to have to try and roll out solutions that are more systemic. So individually, one at a time, yes, we have to do these things. And we have to be really responsive on a one-on-one basis, because no two situations are alike when it comes to people. But systemically, when it comes to built environment and on these sorts of things, we can definitely find systemic solutions. They will continue to arise as we do this work over the next few years. The goal is a barrier-free Canada by 2040. My term is 4 years, and we will, I will want to see success by the end of my 4 years in something. I'm just not sure yet what that will be. I'm still, it's early days, but I am very excited about the possibilities.
So say I'm a leader that's gaining some influence in the organization. They know that they will be a part of embracing accessibility in the workplace over time, but they don't know where to go for resources now. Where would you send them to educate them a bit?
There are lots of good resources out there. Of course, determining who they are, what they are when you don't know is challenging. But in BC, the accessibleemployers.ca is the president's group, which was set up by government. And it's leaders, CEOs from across the spectrum of employers, small, medium, large, government, non. And they are all committed to this work. And so they are sharing best practices. They are sharing information. They have training. They have resources available. And there's an amazing organization or an amazing amount of work being done in the UK on this. The UK is ahead of Canada, I would say, in a lot of regards as it relates to employment. Maybe not in some of the other aspects, but in employment. And one of the things that I love and I would point people to specifically around the culture shift and the changing the way you think about this, there is a video done by Business Disability International in the UK, and it's on YouTube. It's called "Labels Are So Old Brain." It is fantastic. It's like a 2-minute video, easy watch, but it really makes you think about what is disability, why does it matter, and why does it matter in the context? Why does inclusion matter in the context of employment and business?
I will include the video in the show notes. So if anybody's looking for it, I will absolutely put it in there. Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you so much for your brain. Thank you so much for your time of helping us think a little differently about accessibility and how important it is, and that it is not what you might think it is. And that it's, I really like the idea of curiosity, of maybe understanding your staff a bit more and understanding what you do now to get better at these things, because ignorance is the biggest problem of this.
None of us know what we don't know.
Yeah.
Really, right? And the best opportunities for learning exist on that person-to-person basis, right? Get to know your people. Get to know them. Get to know what they're bringing to the table. That they're as much as their, you know, resume it brings to the table, so does who they are as a person. And who they are as a person might include a disability. And that disability might mean they are incredibly innovative because they are having to innovate every day just to accomplish the same things that other people accomplish. That innovation, that way of thinking is infectious. And it changes how you think about disability. It changes how you think about inclusion. It changes how you think about what you can do with a process or a policy.
I am not letting you get out of here without the last question, which is, what's one simple action people can do right now to improve their relationships at work?
I would say get to know the people. Ask a question, a human question, not a work-related question. You know, how are you doing? You know, what's new? What do you love to do? What do you do on your weekend? Now, obviously, within the confines of appropriate boundaries at work, we don't all want to be everybody's best friend, and there are appropriate boundaries. But I think getting to know a person more deeply than their role is really important, because people bring a lot more than their work-related skills to the job.
That's Stephanie Cadieu. She's Canada's first Chief Accessibility Officer, talking all about accessibility. Thank you, Stephanie, so much for your time today.
Thanks, Russell.